How you doing, everybody? And welcome into Sports Talk on a Tuesday. Scott Beatty and Lauren Tate with you right until 6 o'clock. Glad you are along. It's another week of basketball ahead for us on the horizon. Illinois will take on Longwood tomorrow night. They will go up to the United Center to take on New Mexico State on Saturday evening in the Lou Henson game and the matchup between his former teams. And we have that to look forward to. Also, the stove is heating up as winter meetings are going on for Major League Baseball.
You got a loaded show tonight.
Don't we?
I mean, you got a little bit of everything.
That's right. Tom Ackerman will join us from KMOX Radio. We normally get a lot of scoop from him during the baseball season, and we'll see what's going on with the Cardinals angle of things as free agents abound, but all these teams are kind of waiting to see what will happen because the big free agent class is next year. So everybody's trying to either offload something right now and get something out of it, or maybe hold on and wait and see what they can get next year. And we'll see.
Wait till next year?
Yeah, well, in terms of the big free agent signings. So, yeah. And two of the biggest names, of course, have already been taken care of. Obviously, Giancarlo Stanton is the big name, and he's going to the Yankees. And, well, Will Leach wrote an interesting article about all that on sportsonearth.com, basically saying if you had any sympathy or any sentiment towards rooting for the Yankees because of what they did last year and Aaron Judge and all that, that's now gone.
It's gone.
Because they're just...
I hate them again.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I hated them all my life. Then I liked them last year, and now I hate them again.
He pointed out there were like three moments in time where you were allowed to root for them, and one was Derek Jeter and that whole rookie class that came up together in 96 and that kind of magic they put together in that first run. The second was 2001 after 9/11 and in the World Series. They sort of became a sentimental favorite there. And the third was last year with kind of a resurgence of them with Aaron Judge and all that. But
they just have so much more money than everybody else that it's not fair.
Now they're all overloaded. So all overloaded again. And
I still can't get over, though, the fact that back-to-back they're going to be batting a guy that's making $500,000 and the next guy's going to be making $25 million. Judge, can you imagine Judge playing next year for $500,000?
Well, and it's the same like Chris Bryant. What's he going to be making when he's done with this?
Well,
it's
that's what the Cubs have to save up for.
Yeah.
Because when these guys, you know, Bryant and others, when they reach that point where they can get some money, you're really going to have to pay them or they'll go somewhere else.
And presumably when they sign Bryce Harper as well. So.
Oh, boy. Do they have enough money to do that?
Does anybody?
That's next year, isn't it?
They keep making those changes at Wrigley Field. They're making more changes right now as we speak. So apparently they're doing just fine. Some of the headlines today, and we'll dive more into this, but Brad Underwood, head coach of Illinois men's basketball, meeting with the media today. And letting everybody know LaRon Black is likely out with that hyperextended elbow.
He cannot straighten out the arm.
That could be a problem.
Well, he's not going to play tomorrow night.
No.
And I don't know if he'll play against New Mexico State Saturday. I mean, that's a bad injury.
I guess it would be better now than it would be later.
Well, I don't think this is a long, long-term thing. But as far as playing this week, that's a stretch. And then you've got Kipper Nichols hobbling, which takes out the guy who would have replaced him in the lineup. So you're now going to have to go small, I think, unless they want to, you know, use one of their inexperienced newcomers.
And here's Brad Underwood today talking about all those injuries. Nope, that's not it. Here we go. Brad Underwood.
I would not expect LaRon to play. He's progressing, but, you know, I would expect him to not be out. He did not practice yesterday, dealing with the hyperextension of his elbow. He's got some swelling. I don't know. I'm not getting into all the medical terminology there, but, you know, it's not something that we foresee being a long-term injury, and we all know LaRon's a pretty tough kid, and he's going to get back out there as soon as he can. Kipper Nichols got hurt yesterday, practice, so Kipper's a game-time decision as well. We're still finding out information on him in regards to a foot injury, so... you'll see a smaller version of the Illini tomorrow, and we'll still be the same team we've always been, and just a couple men down, and that means a couple guys got to step up.
Of course, Brad Underwood's system is predicated on creating a lot of havoc with smaller lineups, so if there's anybody that can do it, it's Brad Underwood.
And they did a pretty good job with the smaller lineup at UNLV. I mean, they actually might have played better. I can't say they'd played better had Blackman available, but the guys that were out there played pretty well, and they used that zone effectively, and they out-rebounded what he called the number one rebounding team in the country. And they certainly got two great rebounders on that team at UNLV, and the Illini out-rebounded them.
For a team that – this team does not madden me like teams of the past have. This team is, I would say, frustrating, and I think the difference is because you can see that they're close. As opposed to teams of the past where they would have stretches where they played well and stretches where they didn't, but you just thought, they just don't have it. This team, you go, whoa, if they keep that up, they're really good. And this is a team, I keep saying this now, this is a team that is, the sum is greater than the total of the parts. Or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts is the expression. And I think that's accurate about this team. There's something with how Underwood's system works when you get everybody working and doing what they're
really
doing.
Playing hard.
Exactly, because you pointed it out too. We go back to that Maryland game. That was the more talented team. Mm-hmm. And UNLV obviously has some guys that are way more talented.
Way more.
But at times, that was the way Illinois was the way better team.
Yeah, well, he's got them playing awfully hard. Now, they're fouling too much. And it was the thing that really interests me about Underwood's coaching, and I noticed this after the first game of the season, and it's been true, I'm told, by people who have been at practice, and I have not made every practice. I've made about eight now practices in addition to the games. And the first day after they have had a game, when they practice on the exact things that were the problems in that game. Did you see what he was doing out there defensively? They're trying to overplay the wings and not foul. I mean, it's a tough thing. It's a tough assignment. But you've got to stop the drivers. If you're going to overplay the wings, that's a tough assignment. It takes a lot of work.
If you want to weigh in on what you're encouraged or discouraged about with this Illinois basketball team or anything else, you certainly can. Join us at 356-9397. Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Here is Brad Underwood talking about how those freshmen played against UNLV on Saturday into Sunday morning.
I thought it was a breakout night for our freshmen. I was really proud to see those guys get to a place in a game where they were mentally submerged into the game. And I saw Trent get to a place I had not seen him with a focus. And I saw, Mark Smith at a place when he's coming over and he's coach, this play, this is going to work the way they're playing. And when you're in tune with the game, And you start to see the game.
What a difference a year makes. Do you remember last year when everyone was clamoring for John Gross this time of year? Put Tijon in. Get him some experience. Get him some minutes. He's going to be a better point guard. And here we are in a place where three freshmen combined for 43 points against UNLV. More than half the scoring. Mark Smith, 17. Trent Frazier, 16. Demonte Williams, with 8, and Greg Eboigbo-Deane had a couple as well. And by the way, I think we'll be seeing some more Greg Eboigbo-Deane
out of necessity.
That guy can go up and get a ball, and you just don't know where it's going when he puts it back up towards the rim if it's an offensive rebound. But you can see why, just in pure athleticism, he's attractive as a basketball
he's
player.
By far the best rebounder on the team, period. Better than Black, better than Finke, better than everybody. I mean, we see it all the time in practice. He's a dominant rebounder, and he's the best shot blocker on the team. But he isn't quite good enough to play yet.
He's raw. He's just very raw.
I mean, he just needs to make, when he gets his hands on the ball, he needs to get it to somebody.
That's right, because he's missed some two-footers.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, if he's inside, he can score. I mean, if he's, you know, you saw that basket that he got, was it the Maryland game or when he came in and got the first basket after we were down 10-0?
Yep.
But what I'm saying is, on the block, when he's guarded, he's not very effective that way yet. Maybe he'll develop that. But he's so good in other ways that he can be a plus on the court if he just doesn't try to do too much offensively. There's four other guys that can score.
Yep. And that's – this guard-oriented system should develop. Think about where this trio, just to start there, Mark Smith, Trent Frazier, Demonte Williams, where they might be in 2 months in terms of the development of their game. Think about where they'll be next year, and you add in Io, and think about where they'll be in 3 years. This could be a really good perimeter offense in the next few years. I don't know when they're going to get there, but you see that they're almost there at times in these losses. They've all been by single digits. I don't know. Maybe I'm drinking too much Kool-Aid here from Brad Underwood, but I'm encouraged.
Well, I can see where you would be. I'm worried about going on the road, and yet Illinois went against Northwestern on the road and played an overtime game and could have won that very easily. I thought he's correct when he said Illinois was in charge of that game most of the way, had the game virtually in their hands if they could just hit some shots, and they had some open shots that didn't fall. But I don't know. I mean, everybody improves as they go along, and this schedule is what scares me. They go to Minnesota, to Michigan, at Nebraska, which is a much improved team, and at Wisconsin for the first five games after we come back. They got Iowa at home, and then they go against Michigan State, which I don't think they're ready to compete with.
No, probably not. Not many teams are, for that matter. But it's interesting about the road schedule. The entire non-conference road schedule and the early Big Ten games, I only see one that they will have had only one real road game because of the crowds.
Mm-hmm.
Because Wake Forest was a Wake Forest crowd, but it wasn't even that big of an environment there. Northwestern was a split crowd. This Las Vegas game ended up having a huge Illinois contingent in it. Obviously, the United Center game this Saturday will have mostly orange in it. And you go to the Arch Rivalry game, and that'll be a split crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they're going to end up having only... Northwestern was a split crowd, too, because they played
at
Rosemont.
And it wasn't at their home. Yeah.
So they're going to have end up in this whole stretch of only played one real, absolute, 100% pure road environment game. And then the next time they have to do that will be at Minnesota. And that's a tough place to go play. That's a great building.
Minnesota's struggling a little bit right now. I'm not sure what happened there. I know they're not real deep, but they've got two of the best inside players, and Lynch, who's a great shot blocker, and then Murphy, who is right now an all-Big Ten, first team, first five player. He gets double-double every game. He's really good.
We'll go to the phones, 356-9397, if you want to jump in. Cyrus is in Urbana. Hey, Cyrus.
Good evening. Lauren, do you think there's a possibility that fans who are desperate to want to see the glass half full have been a little overzealous in, and this is the things that I read and hear, not just on this station, overzealous in where they think Illinois can be this year or even next year with the existing roster?
You hear a lot of overzealous talk? I don't hear it. I mean, the people I talk to are, I think we're lower third. I mean, everybody I talk to think I don't know anybody. You think we're in the top or upper half?
If you go on some of these message boards, years and years and years, it is unicorns and rainbows, and they find every little thing in every game to just hang their hat on. And even your co-host there tonight is saying maybe I'm a little too high on drinking the Kool-Aid. This is why I say this, you know. The little things that you're taking away from some of these games with some of these newer players, doesn't everyone realize that when you're a new player and no one's got film on you and no one's really seen your system in place, you know, everybody adjusts, and the really good coaches adjust really well, right?
Well, yeah, and it's really hard to win on the road in the Big Ten. I just judge everything by the Big Ten. I mean, you heard me when we started talking a while ago. I skipped the New Mexico State game. I skipped the Missouri game, went right to those four games that we've got out of five at the start of the Big Ten season are all on the road. Illinois could lose all four of those games. And they're already 0-2. I mean, and then you play Michigan State. So what's your record going to be? How are you going to get to 500 if you start out 2-6?
And let me ask you this. Do you really think – I know the committee is goofy sometimes when it comes around to March, but the way the Big Ten as a conference has trended thus far,
oh boy,
and the fact that the non-conference season is on the eve of wrapping up, and there really aren't a whole lot of opportunities to boost the, how is the committee gonna judge the Big Ten in March? I don't care if you finish sixth or seventh in the Big Ten. I think it's a conference like the ACC, they could be going as many as 9 or 10 deep.
Well, Illinois, the Big Ten's hurt by the fact that they've played so poorly in the preseason. There's no doubt. I think teams like Iowa and Indiana and some of those are really in trouble. Wisconsin, for sure. But I think if you finish over 500 in the Big Ten, it's very seldom that if you look historically, I don't care how good the league is, up or down, if you finish over 500 in the league, you're probably going to get a bid.
Cyrus, appreciate the phone call. And I'm not ready to say, hey, this is an NCAA tournament or something like that, tournament team. I'm just saying I see how this team is going to be better. And at some point, you could say this could be a pretty good basketball team. That may even happen at some point this year because of the way you see things start to come together and historically how Brad Underwood's teams have played. They don't have a Juwan Evans like he did last year at Oklahoma State. I get that. I'm just saying the what you could see this team becoming is not what you could have seen out of some teams here in the most recent years. I think you just didn't see a lot of hope in terms of improvement, what you had in the early season the last couple of years compared to what you have this year.
Well, I will say this about the recent teams of growth. They came extremely close to making the NCAA. Within a game, at least two occasions recently, they came within one game. I don't know that this team's going to come within one game.
No, maybe not this year. And even if...
Well, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
For future years, that depends on a lot of things.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that depends on them finding a center somewhere. Well, it does.
Did you see what McCoy did the other night?
I mean, if he got the ball down low, it was just a basket. There was nothing anybody could do.
You know, they had a center recruited here, Jeremiah Tillman. What happened to him?
I don't know. I don't know whatever happened to him.
We'll have to see. Maybe
it's a bad name.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see him here in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Hey, I want to say that we hope to see you tomorrow because tomorrow's our annual Carl Salvation Army Toy Drive collection, and it starts tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. This has been something we've been partnering with for many, many years, and it has such a big impact, tangible impact in the community. So that's why we continue to do this every year and partnering with the Salvation Army and Carl. This year, new place for it, the Carl Orthopedics and Sports Medicine Center, just a little bit south of the State Farm Center on 1st and Windsor Road. So if you're coming to the game tomorrow, just swing on by. We'll be there. And you can drop off a new unwrapped toy for a kid birth through age 12. If you don't have the time to go get something for that, a monetary donation will work as well. You can give that, make that payable to Salvation Army. They will turn that around into toys for kids who need it here in the area. We're collecting from 7 a.m. till 6 o'clock tomorrow. Really appreciate your help and hope to see you there. We'll switch gears to baseball, and we'll also get a beat as well on the Mizzou basketball team because the arch rivalry game is not too far away, and we'll come back to some more basketball as well here as we make our way through Sports Talk on Tuesday.
It's more Fighting Illini men's basketball Wednesday night at 7 as they host Longwood College. It'll be right here in Champaign at 7 o'clock. Illini game day with Scott Beatty at 5:30 right here on DWS.
.531 on Sports Talk. Make that 5:32. Glad you're along with us. Lauren Tate and me, Scott Beatty. Hope you're doing well. Good to hear from our friend down in St. Louis. It's Tom Ackerman from KMOX Radio, 1120 AM. Tom, is the stove hot for you there?
Oh, it's warming up. Well, it was really hot until Giancarlo Stanton decided to go to the Yankees, and then it cooled off a little bit. But the Cardinals, once they got down to the winter meetings in Orlando, really are getting after it. John Mozeliak's been down there in his suite talking to executives and making the rounds and trying to figure out the direction the Cardinals are headed. We know what they want. Now it's a matter of getting those particular pieces into place. And truth be told, even if they got Stanton and they made an aggressive pursuit for him, as aggressive as I've seen in a long time for one player, they still had to fill a lot of roles around him. So now they know, and a lot of other teams know, that they're willing to take on a lot of money and send off a lot of prospects if they need to. So they're going to identify a middle-of-the-order bat, which is what Stanton represented. They want a closer. They've already signed a starter, Miles Michaelis, who they think can be very good for them. They've signed, he completed a physical today, but they need to review it. Luke Gregerson, who actually was drafted by them but never pitched for them back in 2006. And in 2009, they traded him to the Padres. He's a veteran reliever. They like him, so he could be a good part of their bullpen. But they want to identify a closer and a middle-of-the-order bat and maybe two offensive pieces, depending on who they get.
Well, I want to ask you more about who might be the targets, but what's your best understanding of why Giancarlo Stanton spurned the Cardinals? Is it just the glitz and glamour of the Yankees?
Well, he spurned the Cardinals and the Giants to begin with. He did not have them on his list that he gave to the Marlins. He picked four teams that he liked, and those were the four teams that played in the championship series. So it was kind of like a, you know, what have you done for me lately situation. He looked at four teams that he, the last four teams that he saw, and thought, I like those four, and I want to win now. So I guess those are the four that I like. And that's kind of how I interpreted it. The Yankees have a good thing going. I can't blame anybody for wanting to play for them. The Dodgers are his hometown team. Understand that. The Astros won the World Series. Certainly an attractive, fun team, seems to be. And the Cubs certainly seem to have a lot of fun. And they went to the NLCS, fell short. But they'll be good for a long time. So those are four teams. But then he took a meeting with the Cardinals and the Giants, and it sort of dragged everything out. So whether that was his fault or the Marlins' fault or everybody's fault, they did string that out for a while, and the Cardinals ended up making a pitch to Stanton that they still thought they could change his mind with everything that happens in St. Louis, the atmosphere, the excitement, you'll be the king of the city, et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't quite work out for them. They were willing to take on a lot of salary. They were willing to take to send some really good prospects to the Marlins. Marlins liked the deal, but Stanton ultimately wanted to go where he wanted to go, and he'll be with the Yankees, and that'll be an attractive lineup for sure. There are no guarantees in baseball, but they have to be the favorite right now, and if that's what he wants and wants to be in the best situation to win in 2018, then that's what he got.
At the other seven positions, discarding catcher, do the Cardinals have anybody that is not tradable?
Yadier Molina is not tradable.
That's
beyond
catcher.
That, yeah, he's good. Beyond that, no, but they're not going to trade. I mean, it's all about value, so you know, they feel that anybody that is a high performer that doesn't make a lot of money, they're not going to trade. So, Tommy Pham, Paul DeYoung.
Pham's probably not going to be traded, is he?
No.
But what about Carpenter? Where are they with Carpenter, and where will he play next season?
Well, it depends on who they get, Lauren. I mean,
right.
I think that they are identifying a middle-of-the-order bat. They've said it over and over that they want an impact bat, and they weren't messing around. I mean, they wanted Giancarlo Stanton. They're not going to find a Giancarlo Stanton in these remaining players, but there are some very, very good players, make no mistake about it. MVP caliber bats.
J.D. Martinez?
J.D. Martinez, the hesitation I have on him is, and I know a lot of people are hot on him, but he's going to ask for a ton of money, and that's, if you're getting close to $30 million a year for somebody that's never been the guy, I'm a little concerned about that. J.D. Martinez is really good, but he was in a lineup with Paul Goldschmidt in Arizona. He was in a lineup with Miguel Cabrera in Detroit.
Protection.
I'd hesitate on giving that kind of money to a guy like that. They need somebody who's going to be the man. And if it's at that price, Giancarlo Stanton's your guy. Now, an interesting name that's come about today, hotter than ever, is Manny Machado, the third baseman for the Orioles. Ken Rosenthal reported that the Orioles are willing to move Machado. He has indicated that he'd like to play shortstop if he can. He's the third baseman, wouldn't mind playing short. The Cardinals do have some flexibility there at third and short. They could move DeYoung to third very easily and accommodate him at short, or the other way around. They could play him at third, whatever they would want to do. And Rosenthal reported that the Orioles would be looking for two pitchers that they could put into their rotation right away, preferably young, exciting pitchers, and the Cardinals have a ton of those. So that would be, the question would be, do the Cardinals want to make a deal for somebody who's going to be a free agent in a year?
Oops.
So how much are you giving up for somebody that could end up going somewhere else, a la Jason Hayward?
Yeah.
So that they'd have to be a little careful about making a deal like that. Just throwing some other names out there. The Marlins obviously have two outfielders that the Cardinals would be interested in. The Marlins know what the Cardinals have to offer. They share a spring training complex with them, and they also just negotiated the Giancarlo Stanton deal. So they're very aware of what the Cardinals are willing to do in terms of trades and prospects. So Christian Yelich, who can do a lot of different things, is an attractive player to the Cards because of his cost control for a number of years. But Marcell Ozuna might be a little more of that impact bat that they're looking for. He packs a wallop in that bat. He's got a lot of power, and he's not going to make Giancarlo Stanton money. That will come at a price also. So they're weighing all of those things, and some pretty nice names that are still available out there. And I'm not saying they would just grab one. I mean, maybe they go out and try to get two players.
You know, I think the Cardinals are in a very interesting position here as we're talking with Tom Ackerman from KMOX Radio in St. Louis. They were on the outside looking into the playoffs. They weren't that terrible considering that they somewhat were strapped for some talent last year, especially in the lineup. But do you approach this now, if you're John Mozeliak, as I got to kind of blow it up a little bit and start over, or try to get a couple more pieces here and make this team really good when it seems like they're still going to be behind, you know, you fill in the blank, the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Astros, the Yankees, in terms of having enough pieces to make a deep playoff run? I don't know how you would navigate it.
Well, I think that they know that they have a plethora of starting pitchers for the future. So whether they hang on to them or not, they're going to have a good rotation for years to come. It would be nice to see some of those pitchers continue to blossom and develop, but they could also deal them if they wanted to. They have some good young position players, and I think they believe that they could be in contention with some moves here and there, but I think they know that they need to take some gambles. They need to spend some money. They have a $1.3 billion television deal kicking in this year. Later this week, they will break ground on the second phase of Ballpark Village. That is a massive amount of revenue that will be coming in. So the Cardinals have a lot of money, and they have the ability to have a top-10 payroll in this game. So they know that they're going to be a player. This is not a situation where they blow anything up. They will definitely be a player. They just have to figure out who are the ones that are going to change them, change their identity, make them into a star caliber bunch. Right now, they're a good team. But, you know, the Brewers are also up and coming, so they have to worry about them too. They need to make sure that they don't let the Cubs and Brewers get too far ahead of them and that they stay right there with them. And I think the Cardinals, you know, missing two playoff years in a row, even though they were very close and took it down to the last weekend both times, it's not acceptable here. You know, the Cardinals have 11 world championship flags flying. The fans don't like it. They don't like missing the playoffs at all. They let them know about it. The fans are really revved up today. I mean, they are frustrated about losing Stanton. Some people don't care about losing Stanton, want to spend the money elsewhere. Then they hear about the Machado rumors, and Twitter is just ablaze with Cardinals fans. They are fired up. And they are going to put heat on John Mozeliak in the front office to make something happen. And they will try to appease those fans, I'm certain, because their paying customers are a big reason why they're attractive. They use the 3.5 million fans all the time to sell players on coming to St. Louis. So they're going to make sure those fans are happy. They want to make sure that this team is capable of being great for the long haul. Not good, but great. And winning a world championship is the goal.
Tom Ackerman with us from KMOX Radio in St. Louis. Want to switch gears for a moment to basketball, particularly Mizzou. We're 11 days away from the arch rivalry game between Illinois and Missouri, and Mizzou has obviously a lot of renewed interest now because of this stellar freshman class, even without Michael Porter Jr., who was injured. What's the buzz for Mizzou basketball right now?
Mizzou is on the upswing. They just won a game by scoring 100 points against Wisconsin Green Bay, and while that's not it wasn't a great addition, it's a step forward in that they're sharing the basketball really well. They have offensive sources all over the place, and that's a good sign because Michael Porter Jr. could have been one of the best, if not the best player in the country in 2018. I mean, he was on that track, first-team All-American, and who knows when you get him back, if ever. They when they came out with the release that he was going to have surgery, the estimate with the that he would likely miss the rest of the season. So you plan to go on without him, and they're getting good sources of offense from all over the place, inside and outside. They will tend to make some freshman mistakes. You're seeing that, but you're also seeing a buy-in defensively. Konzo Martin's teams through the years, whether he was at Cal or Tennessee or Missouri State, were very highly rated defensively. So he's always in their ear about positioning, active hands, making sure that they're doing the right things defensively, and they're starting to show great signs of that. They're 8-2. They've lost two games. One of them was an absolute battle against West Virginia where they were up big in the second half and let it slip away with turnovers. Kind of got ugly, although West Virginia, one of the best press teams in the country, just put it on them and made a young team make mistakes. And the other game that they lost was at Utah, and it was a flop, and it was pretty soon after they learned that Porter was injured and he wasn't going to be joining them, and it was just, you know, that game kind of got away from them. Otherwise, they've been pretty good. And so, you know, they have a couple more games, North Florida on Saturday, interesting opponent in Stephen F. Austin next week, and then the bragging rights game on the 23rd, which will be a spectacle. I mean, that Missouri has sold out its allotment. I think last I heard this morning they had about 25 or 50 tickets left of their allotment, so it'll be a lot different than what we've seen in that building in the past where there was more orange than black and gold. And so they'll be boosted by the fan base. The St. Louis alums are excited to see them, and they're an exciting team. And it's a nice brand of basketball to watch. And Konzo has put together a good product here in his first year.
How's the other Porter doing?
Jonte's good. I like his footwork. I think he's a good big man. He can step out and shoot it too. But he's a load inside. Jeremiah Tillman has a lot of skill. I don't think he realizes how good he can be, and he tends to foul a lot. But those two big boys in there give them a lot because it allows Kevin Puryear now, who used to be the big guy inside, to step out and shoot it a little bit, and he gets a little more breathing room. Jordan Barnett, who's a big body, he can now step outside and do some things on the outside and might see a few more scoring lanes because of the big trees inside. So Porter is he's impressive to me. He's very young. He just turned 18, but he has a maturity about him on the floor, has a good basketball IQ, and I think the sky's the limit for him, honestly.
Tom, we always appreciate your time. You're always generous with it to spend some of it with us. And I know you're headed to a Blues game there, so you're just a busy guy.
Well, yeah, I'm having a good old time. My wife, I just headed downtown, and she said, "Oh, you got to work tonight, the Blues game." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "But, you know, got to work and covering a hockey game are two different things." I really enjoy it, honestly. I mean, I think it'll be a lot of fun. Tonight's kind of a showdown. The Blues are the number one team in the West. Tampa Bay's number one in the East. Two best teams in the NHL. So the Blues are dealing with all kinds of injuries. So there's fans are going to try to see what they can do. A little hobbled. But, yeah, here I am about to get off on the 14th Street exit at Scottrade Center for some Blues hockey tonight.
Well, enjoy your time, and we appreciate you being with us. Tom, we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Appreciate it as always, guys. Thank you.
Tom Ackerman, KMOX Radio 1120. You can follow him on Twitter as well at Ackerman 1120. Lauren and I have more. We'll hear a little bit from Lou Henson when we come back.
Hi, it's Dave Gentry. Join us on the DWS Morning Show for Dave Leak from Parkland and the Salvation Army Toy Drive. Elizabeth will be out there during the 8 o'clock hour here on DWS.
Scott Beatty and Lauren Tate with you. Saturday, Illinois basketball up at the United Center in Chicago against New Mexico State. That's the former school that Lou Henson coach, as well as obviously Illinois. And Lou Henson spoke today to us, and as usual, taking the middle road.
I'd say the game should probably be fairly even. Now, the coach of New Mexico State, this is his first year to be a head coach. I remember what I knew but he knows much more than I knew at that time. He's a very good coach, and of course we got a great coach, Coach Underwood. So it probably even game or close to it.
And he's given some direction apparently to his family.
And by the way, let me see, we're going to probably have 25, 30, 35 family members. And I've told them, you sit there and you don't cheer for either team. Do not cheer. Most of them are Illinois, but I told them, now, you know they'll do what I tell them to do.
It seems to me, and he acknowledged that it sounds like Illinois is a little bit closer to his heart. Maybe he's saying that because he's here, but it seems like this is where his heart is. He loves New Mexico State, but...
Well, he's going back to New Mexico in January, so listen, I've been down there with him in New Mexico, in Las Cruces.
He is revered down there?
You bet. He's the only guy that ever took New Mexico State to the Final Four. They had three great teams beaten by Al Cinder and the UCLA team. Al Cinder wasn't on all three, but he had two. And the only reason they reached the Final Four is that one year they didn't meet UCLA until the Final Four. The other 2 years they met them in the regional.
Some 140 or so players are going to come for a reception that they're going to have. And by the way, Lou is going to join us Thursday night here on Sports Talk. We'll be live at Scotty's Brewhouse.
Lou will be there.
Yep. And also Isaiah Martinez from the Illinois wrestling team as well, a champion wrestler. But Lou, he looks great. He's concerned about his voice because it's a little raspy, but I think it's fine. And he seemed as energetic as I'd seen him.
He had a great time today because seated as he watched practice today, players and coaches came over individually. They must have organized it because they came one by one and all sat down with him and talked to him. Some of the players talked to him for 3, 4, 5 minutes.
He sat there, he put his arm around Mark Smith, and I thought, there is a torch being passed somehow. It was almost like a grandfather-grandson type moment in Illinois basketball, or a great-grandfather. But you thought, there is history and everything that you're proud about with Illinois basketball, and there's potentially one of the best players that will be coming through here in a generation in Mark Smith. So I don't want to overspeak on Mark Smith because he's been really hyped, but I thought it was just a cool moment.
Yeah, well, and he loves talking to Kipper Nichols. Nichols came over and talked to him. Of course, as I say, virtually all of them, and all the coaches too. They all sat down with him and they talked for a few minutes and then, moved on. But this was not during practice. This was...
Yeah, the warm-up.
During the warm-up period, yeah. And Black came over and talked to him during practice, but Black couldn't practice because of his left arm.
He had a little extra time. Yeah. We'll wrap this up in a moment.
Wednesday at NewsGazette.com, Tate Lines Unedited, the podcast. Lauren Tate talks to Jamal Walker, Illinois basketball assistant, about all things Illini.
Jamal Walker is your podcast guest tomorrow. That'll be good.
Yeah, Jamal and I talked for about 20 minutes yesterday. I went back to when last year when he was coaching in the NIT as the head coach of the University of Illinois basketball team after John Gross had been let go, and just to get a feel for where he is and where he thinks the team is. And he's dealing with the freshmen that you talk about are guards, and he deals with the guards on the team. That's his specific area of expertise, and he was a guard. And I like Jamal. He's a good recruiter, and he's a guy that's I've also brought up the Tillman thing because he was right in the middle of that. He's the guy that got Tillman to sign, and then
he was scheduled to be on with us the day that happened.
Oh no.
And understandably so, he was in the middle of that and he couldn't come on the day that happened. But
the day that
Tillman decommitted.
Oh boy.
Yeah. But I think in the long run, Illinois will be all right. We'll see how it goes. Thank you, Mr. Tate.
Yes.
Thank you, Blake Landa, behind the scenes. Thank you, Tom Ackerman from KMOX Radio. Thanks for listening. Michael Kaiser fills in tomorrow, and I'll be back for you with game day tomorrow for Illinois against Longwood. It's News Talk 1400, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, News Gazette Media Station. Good night.